Hi. It's wonderful. We'll have to import this custom. My name is Tom Powers, and I am a sanitarium commuter. Alas. I don't want to trip on my long gray beard up here, but I too was young when I came into this program. Not quite that young, but I was 30 years old. 1941. It's getting to be a long time ago. I'd like to say a few things about statistics, first of all, about this total program, about the thing we're up against here. I have a friend who's been around AA a long time, darn good AA, done a lot of work. He's done a lot of work professionally, too, to try to help with this disease. And he was groaning and moaning about the fact that out of the total problem, that Alcoholics Anonymous is touching so small a part of it. And I would like to submit to you a very contrary opinion to that, which was born out of a little argument we had lasting a couple of hours, starting with that introduction. I would like to submit to you that Alcoholics Anonymous is taking one hell of a big bite out of this total program. First of all, what is the total problem? What is the total problem? Let's confine it to the United States of America. The figure that the National Council on Alcoholism gives for alcoholics in this country is something just under 6 million. Let's call it 6 million. The Reader's Digest, some months ago, published an article entitled "The Rising Tide of Alcoholism." The Digest does not publish anything that it doesn't very carefully research. Presumably, they didn't just put their figures in there without looking at them. The figure they gave for the total number of alcoholics in this country was 5% of the population. It would be something just under 10 million. Accurate statistics are not only difficult but impossible to get. All you can get is approximations. But taking those two figures, which have been arrived at in as disciplined a way as you can get, and splitting the difference, let's say the total problem is 8 million people in this country now bearing this scourge, this curse, this living death of being forced by warped and twisted and pathologically stepped up desires to take into your body repeatedly a substance that you know is destroying not only your physical life but your integrity as an intelligent creature, which is a very much tougher piece of business. Now, I think this program is one of the phenomenons of all ages. And 500,000 sober people out of that total is no small thing for this reason. At any given time, if you want to proceed as the statisticians proceed, you take a net and you seine off 100 alcoholics as a sample, and you sit your sample down, and these are just alcoholics pulled at random out of the sea of misery that this total problem is. Out of the 100, how many at any given time are looking for help? How many would say yes to help if it was shoved right under their noses? a very large percentage of the total at any given time doesn't want help. And the hell of it is, you can't have any help till you want it in this game. If it were a physical disease only, you could incarcerate these people and give them x-rays or whatever physically it took to correct the condition. But the physical difficulties, and they are grave, are only byproducts of the real trouble. God knows when they occur. They require immediate attention. They are first things in their order. If you are an alcoholic and you are having convulsions, you don't need any AA, you need a doctor. Or if you are in an acute manic seizure or running a paranoid syndrome or something, you better get yourself an alienist. But when the doctor gets through with you and patches up your convulsions and puts you on something that would even prevent your convulsing again, and when the alienist gets through with your paranoid syndrome or whatever you're running, if they do straighten it out, and they can sometimes, and you go back on the street, you are still an alcoholic. Because this thing is a sickness of the body, but that's a byproduct. And it's a sickness of the mind, and what is not so well known, that's a byproduct. It is essentially and deeply a sickness of the spirit. And I don't mean something vague that you can't experience. I mean something that every created being, every dog and cat experiences. And that is that you are an intelligence and you are a will. And if you're an alcoholic, that's where you're hurting. Because you can't make an agreement with yourself and keep it. And that is not an illness of the mind, that's an illness of the spirit. It's an illness of the intelligence. And it is some kind of a god-awful collapse of this miraculous power called through all the ages voluntas. When I say to the hand, close, I don't know how it closes, open. It built into each of us is this fiat, this ability to be a king within the realm of this body and this mind and to give commands. And in a limited way, in a normal person, the commands are obeyed. And this is where the warping is, and this is where the twisting is. And you can't cure it except with the agreement of the person who is sick in this way. He must wish to be helped, or she. It's an absolutely fundamental condition. You can't steer around it. You can't force an alcoholic to get well. Look back over your history, how many attempts have been made. You can't blame people whose hearts are wrung by the misery coming out of this thing to want to come in and grab the guy by the neck and say, you gotta get well. It never works that way. It's only when he says, I am in trouble, yes, I would like help. But out of any hundred, given hundred, at any given time, not many are at that point. I've asked different people, how many would you say out of 100? 10, 15, 20? I think that would be very high. You'd have to guess. It would be impossible to come at it statistically. But if you work in this field for a while, if you stay in AA, having gotten your own brains back again, your own heart back again, your own will back again, go out and try to help others. Again and again and again and again and again and again, you see people who just haven't come up to the point of wanting it at all. I look back on my own history. For years, I was boozy as hell and sick as hell. and all over the lot with this thing. But I wasn't ready for any help. I was one of the 75-80% who at any given time don't want help. They don't know they want it, they don't know they need it, or they even you reach a point where you know you need it and you still don't want it. How many of these do we see? After exposure to this program, I spent 5 years knowing that I needed it and somewhere wanting it, but not wanting it enough to come in here and do a job. Now then, if you take that kind of a statistical rundown, and if you pull off of the total number of alcoholics, those who have reached the point, and oh God, it's an expensive point to reach, how much misery does it take to initiate a person this far? But if you pull off the number at any given time, who will say, yes, I do want help? It isn't more than a million or two at most. And out of that number, there are 500,000 receiving the benefit of this program. This program, this movement, is some tremendous thing in the midst of this misery. Because otherwise, when the agony squeezed them down to the point where they said, yes, I want help, there wouldn't be any help. There would be help for the convulsions, yes. There would be help for the manic seizures, yes. There would be help for all of the incidental misery, but for the deep misery, for the knowledge that I am a man who is killing myself in this way and I can't stop, for that there would be no hope if it were not for this fellowship. So anybody who has the great good fortune to have found his way to the point in alcoholism where he is able to say, yes, I would accept help if it were possible for me. That is some tremendous thing. Already he is well along. I would say never sell that short. Get down on your knees and thank God if you're that far. If you are willing to entertain the possibility that you got a booze problem and you need help, man, that's some terrific advance. And then if you have the further good fortune to know about this program and to know that for people who have reached that point, this thing offers a very high statistical probability that you will be delivered from this killing and hideous death, we don't rejoice enough in our good fortune. We don't take the time to sit down and realize what a stupendously good thing we have stumbled into. I was hurting by the time I got exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous. Real bad. I guess nearly everybody is by the time they get here. Each one in his own way, or her own way. The idea of high bottoms and low bottoms is an interesting idea. It's an interesting thing that grows up in the fellowship. The idea of bottom at all is an interesting thing, that a certain point must be reached before the willingness comes, before the ego, which is doing it its own way, collapses for a moment and says, if there is a God or if there is any help, please help me. Before that comes, there's a great struggle. Bottom is an interesting thing. But I think sometimes things that are called low bottom are merely noisy and messy. And since the things that are called high bottom, some people that are called high bottom have been squeezed and hurt by this disease as much or more. Each in his own way, her own way, coming in here, has drunk of the cup of misery, of acute suffering that this disease produces. Oddly enough, that's one of the great mercies of the disease, the fact that it produces this acute misery. Because along with the acute misery, there is a fantastic stupidity. And there is no cure for stupidity except misery. You know, if a person was collapsing on the street and failing at his job and alienating his wife and family, and they discovered that it was eating strawberries that did this, there wouldn't be any great shriek or hoop and holler. The man would just stop eating strawberries. That would be a normal reaction to anybody who found himself in this kind of a hell of a rack-up. The addiction is by no means that simple. It is not a case of taking something into the body which is an ordinary substance. The thing that draws the person back again and again to take this stuff in the teeth of these fierce, terribly painful life situations is a very profound thing, and it doesn't yield to correction except by deep measures. This is a simple program, but it runs deep. I came in here out of my second bug house, and I hadn't been in the bug house. This was in the fall of 1941. I went to the bug house first in 1940. And I was kept there for 10 weeks, and I went back again in 1941 for a few more weeks. And I wasn't in the bug, I was not in the drying out part of the bug house, I was in the bug part. I had one of these syndromes. I remember lying on the bed, huffing and puffing, and a big psychiatrist sat there, and I said, "What is the matter with me?" And he said, "We're going to have to clear up this syndrome you've developed." And I thought, "Wow, that's going to take something to clear up the syndrome." And it turned out that a syndrome is just a Greek way of saying a group of symptoms. If you got a cold in your head and the nose runs, that's the syndrome. I was hung up on some of these technical terms. But I came into Alcoholics Anonymous after the second trip in to have my head rewired. And I was hurting real bad. And I had one advantage that I think is a basic one here, and that is I had a strong enough desire for help so that it cut through a lot of my stupidity, and I had a lot of it. I had a lot of stuff going that says, don't get mixed up with AA because they're a bunch of Jesus shouters and you're an atheist. Don't get into any sawdust. Don't get mixed up with this hysterical stuff. You got enough trouble anyhow. I had a lot of monkey talking in me. And something, though, deeper than the monkey kept saying, yeah, but these people are getting sober, and you better sit still long enough to listen to what they're talking about. I think something like that is a kind of a prerequisite. I don't care what your history is. Well, I do, but I mean, I don't think it's important whether you're high bottom, low bottom, whether your pain is cerebral or visceral, as long as you have been hurt bad enough for this thing so that you're sick of living at a subhuman level, of living like a diseased animal. Because a healthy animal, if you give it a command, it obeys. And if it's eaten rotten stuff, it throws up once and it won't eat it again. So you fall below the level of a healthy animal in this thing. And at a certain point, you get sick of living that way. And I think that's a real good advantage. And I was drawn in by that. And I sat in my first few meetings, and I took in my first few meetings, something of what is here. And I am amazed to this day that I took it in, because I had a lot working against me. It had to get through a lot of flack. But I was tremendously impressed from the very beginning here. And with the fact of recovery, which is not coming through words. It is in the faces of, it is not only in the faces, it is in the carriage, it is in the total look of the people. I think some things are communicated in Alcoholics Anonymous. We got to use words, we got to make speeches. This is the normal way people communicate anything, in business or anything else. You got to run a business, you got to have meetings. We have meetings. But in addition to that, you go into any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you got your eyes open, and if you're a little bit hungry, and if you're ready to take something in, you can see something in the people that is very much more important than anything they will tell you. You can see that these people are well in a way that a great many ordinary people are not. This is a phenomenon which our friend Menninger in the Middle West has called better than well. And some people have gone to AA meetings and have been so impressed with this that they wondered what kind of medicine the citizens were on. Actually, there is a contagion of vitality here, of unfeigned joy in each other's company, that is a little better than normal. The disease itself pulls a person out of contact with his fellow man. It robs him in a most terrible way of fellowship. It isolates him. And this program, this fellowship, this program in action goes back in the direction of cure in a plus way that you can pick up and see in meetings. I picked it up. I didn't know the name for it. I just noticed that these people were having a good time in a way that I hadn't had a good time in a long while. Just a bunch of people getting together and able to smile and laugh in this way, and drop the mask with each other and not pretend with each other. There was a degree of just good, solid human fellowship here that impressed me. And also, what I listened to what some of the people said, and I was impressed by that. And it sunk into me in a way that I never forgot. And I had some times when, thank God, I did remember it, because I didn't have any storybook recovery. It took me a long time to recover in AA. It sunk into me in a way I never could forget or get out of my mind. These people have been in the same kind of trouble I'm in. The speaking at meetings, it didn't make any difference whether they spoke well or ill. Out of the speaking at meetings, I picked up the fact these are my kind. Oh, sure, there's variations. There's rich and poor and up and down, men and women, so forth. But carrying through all of it, I could sit out there and identify and say, yes, this is my kind of trouble. Yes, I drank this way. Yes, I felt this way and thought this way and was tied up in my mind this way and was tied up and encapsulated and imprisoned in my heart this way. I didn't say that to myself, but I felt that. And number two, these people are recovering, and you don't need any credentials beyond what you can see with your eyes at a meeting, although the credentials exist. The performance of this thing, even at that stage, was impressive. It was 1941. The membership had just jumped from 700 to 2,000, and they were very excited about it. That got through to me And it was a kind of strength that stood by me after I did what young Tom was describing. I began a recovery in this program. After a few weeks, I found myself able to do what I had been unable to do with any and all kinds of help before, and I had good help. I had some money behind me. My family paid the freight. My company paid the freight. I had the best kind of medical and psychiatric help, and it was fine as far as it went. But it didn't, and it doesn't touch the addiction. When everything was said and done, when I was all straightened out again, I went out, and when the drinks came around, I didn't have the basic sanity to say no. And now, after a few weeks in this program, that was changed. And when the drinks came around, I said no. My God, the universe hangs on a thread sometimes. On that thread hangs this whole thing. On the ability to renew the human intelligence and will to the point where the man who previously said, well, all right, I guess one won't hurt me. The guy now says, well, no, thank you. You know, you wonder, why the devil do we have to go through all of this agony to accomplish such a simple turn as that? But everything hangs on that. And I now found myself in this program able to say no. And I went on week after week able to say no. And I began to experience what this program says you will experience. I began to get my sanity back. I began to behave in ways that was first not as repulsive as before to my associates, and after a while it became actually acceptable and pleasing. And my home life began to take on aspects it hadn't had in years. There was a degree of harmony. And my business life began to improve, and in short, I began to do what everybody does here with various trimmings. I began to regenerate. I began to recover. I often speculate what it would have been like if I had found in myself enough of that quality, not a medical quality, not a psychiatric quality, but the spiritual quality of humility. If I had been able in myself to find enough of that to do this program a little bit more the way it says on the card and a little bit less my way. Because after a few months, I began to do what young Tom said people do. Sometimes, God help us. I began to take the very strength of the recovery and to ease my way off this program. I began to do it first 80% AA way. Well, I never did it that in the beginning, maybe 70%, 60%. And then I began to change the mixture a little bit as I got saner and soberer. Not sane at depth, just superficially sane enough to think again. Deep sanity is not of the mind. Deep sanity is of the spirit. Deep sanity is enough intelligence to know what is good for you and to embrace it. And enough intelligence to know what is bad for you and avoid it. I got sanity back in a superficial way, and I began thinking my way around this thing, and I began to change the mixture. And I began to have more and more of my ideas. Naturally, I still went to AA meetings. I still worked the parts of the program that I found agreeable, which was the first step, and one-third of the 12th step. Don't ever talk to me about two-steppers if you mean the 12th step, because the last one-third of the 12th step says we practice these principles in all our affairs. And if you did that, you'd never have any trouble. But I practiced the first step because I couldn't talk around it. And I ran out and saved souls and called that the 12th step because it made me feel good. And I gradually fed in more and more of my ideas. And one of my ideas was that this program was at an early stage in its development. And that it had attracted a rather primitive type to begin with, who was highly emotional and tended to be religious. But already there were more sounder types were appearing, you know? And that we sounder types wouldn't say anything to upset the peons, but we would let them have their sawdust and their religiosity, but very quietly we would see that the real motive power here was group therapy. And then I also began to have the idea that a sound type like me shouldn't be getting 6 meetings a month. Maybe about 4 would be right. And then later on it got to be 2. And then later on there was a lot of stupid thinking indeed. And finally, you know how I got drunk? You can't fall off this program if you're really on it. You've got to edge your way off. Because you're surrounded by people who are saner than you are. And if you get talking loosely about these crazy ideas, somebody is apt to grab you by the lapels and say, Powers, what's the matter with you? And you find yourself back on the program. But I began to think very quietly to myself, not sharing these thoughts with others, that it probably wouldn't do me any harm to have a slip. I had seen slips. I thought there was perhaps an outside chance that I wasn't an alcoholic after all. I admitted it. The chance was very small, but I thought, well, if it doesn't work, I've been on this program now a year. I'm successful at the program. If the slip doesn't work, I'll come back in here and have some more AA. And this is a piece of idiocy based upon a radical misunderstanding of the nature of the power which is operative here. I had begun to have a vague notion that there was indeed some kind of higher power. It had penetrated my atheism to that extent, and I had begun, as all atheists do when they return to faith, I had begun to recapitulate all the heresies of the history of the human race. And I began to speculate on the nature of this power. And I thought, well, it's probably something like cosmic rays, you know? And if a fella knew where the switches were, you could turn it on. And when it was inconvenient, you could turn it off. And when it became convenient again, you could turn it on. So I turned it off. You can do that. This power, which I now witness to you as my later view, is not cosmic rays. This power, if you wish, permits itself to be invited off the scene. Not completely, because I think if it were invited off the scene, there would not even be any dust left after the cohering power departed. But he can be asked out as Lord. If I wish to take the lordship back into my hands, and by lordship I mean I just am in command here again, which is way off the program, I may do so. And I did. And then when I came back to have some more AA, I couldn't find the switch again. And I'm not going to take you through the details of my story, But I didn't find the switch again for 4 years. And in that 4 years, I was taken back to the insane asylum 7 times. And in that 4 years, I went from an alcoholic to a dope addict. I wrecked my marriage in a way that was never repairable. I wrecked my physical body and my nervous apparatus in such a way that it took 10 years to repair. And I witness to you that if you are a person who has found his way onto this program, and if you have discovered any hints as to what the nature of this higher power may be very careful how you experiment with inviting it out. It is not a blind and a dumb thing. It is what it has been anciently said to be. It is either nothing and we're all mistaken, or it's the living God. You don't have to be a high school student to understand that. You just have to have enough intelligence left so that you're not a complete educated fool. And this is such a serious matter that those of us who have made this kind of experiment owe it to others who may be tempted to experiment in this way to witness to you that there are areas of this disease that are too dark to be explored. There are bottoms beneath bottoms. And that if, having received the grace of this program, you ever find it in your heart to turn around and walk away from here, thinking you know what you're doing, I would only say, out of my own experience and the experience of others I know like myself who have done this, don't, for God's sake, do it. Come talk to some people in the program first who have done it. In life, the penalties for abuse are stepped up as the substance itself is more or less sacred. I mean, you can kick dirt around because there's a lot of it. It's beautiful and wonderful stuff. Our food comes from it, but it's only soil. But as you move up in the scheme of things, the penalties for kicking stuff around increase. It's not that anybody is overseeing this scene who wishes to be punitive. It is only that people who are irresponsible have got to have some means of realizing what they are kicking around. The gift of life itself has always been recognized by human beings as something that must not be abused. All of our penal codes, let alone our moral codes, say you mustn't take life. And when you are involved in the generative process of founding a family and dealing with life in that way, the rules are stepped up. You mustn't kick it around. You mustn't be irresponsible to your life partner. You mustn't be irresponsible to your children. We are dealing with a thing here of that order, because this fellowship is either nothing, and it certainly isn't that, or it is quite literally the gift of new life to people who have lost it. If you are one of the majority who is able to get enough sanity back to appreciate this gift of new life, come into your AA meetings, pay back into this fellowship, give. You freely receive, freely give. Get out and do 12-step work. Get into this thing. Enjoy yourself. This is the majority experience, thank God. There is, has been, and probably always will be amongst us a minority, of whom I am one, who didn't have enough sanity to see it that way, or who had the sanity and wouldn't exercise it, and who found enough stupidity and arrogance in themselves after having had this thing, after having reached the point in the disease of crying out for help, of then having had the further experience of coming in and knowing by actual participation this renewal of life, who then will turn and throw it away. Those are the people who are going to need special kind of help always here. Because they have done something for which the penalty is rough. Why it is rough, I don't know. It is in nearly all cases. Sometimes a person gets in here and he's around for 3 or 4 or 5 months. He isn't connected yet very well. He has a slip or two and gets back. The minority, however, who get onto this program and go on to recovery and then throw their recovery away, these are people you're going to have amongst you all the time. And I beg your tolerance with these people, because some of them, like myself, really did want it and do want it, and some of them have survived to get back. Most of them have a hell of a time getting back here. In my own case, I'm astonished at the further destruction and the further suffering that was required before I turned a second time and found my way back in here, this time not ever again. God forbid that I'm going to poke my ideas into this thing. I can't escape my ideas. But any time I give anybody carte blanche, any time anybody finds me trying to interpret AA my way, please punch me in the nose. I want to understand what that card says. I want to understand what these words mean. Not what do they mean in my peculiar little psyche, what do they just plain old mean in English? Because there is the salvation for a person who has been fool enough to drift off this. Here is the answer for people who have tried it. They say, I've tried AA and it didn't work. Oh, the hell it didn't. You tried it and you didn't work it. It works for anybody who will work it. I'm not your judge. I'm speaking out of my own experience. I think we have two great objectives here. It says each group has one single objective, and that is to bring the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. There's two kinds of alcoholics still suffering: those who are new, who haven't heard of this yet, or who are just hearing of it. And we all try to help there. I would also call your attention to the minority amongst us who have been fool enough, having had this thing, to then throw it away. They nearly all have the devil of a time getting it back. The answer for those people is, it's always here. You can have it back if you want it, but they only kill one fatted calf. The second time back is much tougher. The degree of sincerity required is much more extreme. And I would say the degree of patient attention to every detail of this program, not trying to get along on what a lot of other people can get along on, but looking into it and see what is the legacy that these first 100 people put together and put in that book and gave to us. What is the program of recovery, and how deeply do I have to go myself to get it back? We have had given to us here something that is not an ordinary thing. This is not an ordinary phenomenon. There is nothing in the laws of sociology or the ordinary association of human beings that would account for the power of renewed hope, of renewed joy, of renewed capacity of the will. You say there's no willpower involved. The will, when the drink comes around, to say no, when otherwise it was going to kill you. Don't tell me that isn't something. That isn't ordinary. That isn't merely medical. God knows we need all the medical help we can get, but that runs deeper. That is not merely psychological. You can go through your books from beginning to end, and you will not find that covered. That is a regeneration of the spirit, and that is what we are experiencing. God, give us the grace to be humble, simple, faithful custodians of that. Thank you.
What can you say? I'll just call your attention to the meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock and ask the Reverend Herb Gravely, if he will, to come up and lead us in the Lord's Prayer.
And now, as our Lord Jesus has taught us, we are bold to pray, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Deliver us from temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen.